Miss an interview? Listen to it now at 1043thefan.com. Brought to you by First Bank. You work hard for your business, so should your bank. Talk to a First Bank business specialist today. First Bank. Business banking for good. Member FDIC.
Sports Radio 1043 The Fan. Every Saturday morning, it's Terry Wickstrom Outdoors. Terry takes you inside the outdoors. You know, hunting, fishing, camping. It's Terry Wickstrom Outdoors. Now, here's Terry.
Good morning on this beautiful Colorado day. You know, it's weekends like this. You know, we've had 60 above, and we've had snow, and we've had cold, and we've had warm again. It goes on and off, and there's so much going on and so much to get ready for. It was got a little snow in the last couple days. The ice is forming down low, and there's some ice fishing going on up in the high country. We're going to talk about ice fishing some today. We're going to talk about a number of things. We're going to talk later on about how to burn off some of those Thanksgiving calories with some hiking and some things available in Colorado State Parks. Second hour, we're going to have the Blue Quill Angler join us. We're going to talk fly fishing, and Brad Peterson will join us, and we're going to talk some waterfall hunting. That cold weather up north has really moved the birds, and the fact that a lot of the ponds are still open down here, the duck and goose hunting has been phenomenal, so we'll cover that. I want to say thanks to the editor-at-large for Field & Stream, Kirk Dieter, and also the editor of Trout Magazine for filling in for me last week while I was on assignment. Kirk is just a tremendous knowledge, and he brought in some wonderful lineup of guests, and I didn't get to listen to the show. I was out of the area, but I heard it went really well, and we just love it, and it's always great when some of these guys can fill in for me. It gives me a chance to go wander a little more, and then you get exposed to a few different people, so we really like that. But we're going to continue with our Legends of Ice Fishing series, and I'm going to go right to the phones, and joining me is probably the Mr. Ice Fishing, the grandfather, the godfather of modern-day ice fishing, and a really true personal friend that I've had the privilege of fishing with so many times. And Mr. Dave Gensa, if we look back, did we know we were starting a revolution back then?
Well, I don't know if we knew, but I was sure hoping. You know, starting to build them fish houses and the things we learned, and yeah, it definitely spread across the country.
Well, you know, I was thinking as I was driving in today how my ice fishing changed when a mutual friend, Greg Clagio, called me and said, there's this guy I know, Dave Gensa, and he's got these portable ice fishing huts. And I'm going, really? You know, kind of thinking. And he said, you got to come and fish with us. And long before there was an ice team, before the first power sticks came along, which I think was early 90s then, I'm not sure, but you can fill me in on the dates, but long before that, you and I and Clagio and a bunch of other guys from up in the Northland there would get together right around this time of the year, usually the first weekend after Thanksgiving, and I don't think we knew we had some good things going on. You had introduced us to portable shelters and the use of electronics in ice fishing, and of course, that's widespread now, but I knew it changed my ice fishing tremendously. I don't know if I understood what it was going to do for the sport in general, Dave.
Well, I know it was certainly exciting to me when I had my Vexilar transducer hanging down the hole. Actually, it was a Sitex back then, but an FL8. And I had seen my jig go down on that screen to that fish that was waiting. And I knew that was a major breakthrough in ice fishing.
Yeah, you know, I want to talk about some more modern things and way things have changed, but I want to touch on what you just said, because it wasn't just, you know, people, I think initially, a lot of avid ice fishermen understand this now, but it wasn't just seeing if there was fish down there, which was monumental, because you knew whether you were presenting to a fish or not, but it was seeing your presentation and watching the fish react to it was probably one of the most revolutionary concepts, don't you think?
Oh, yeah, it's a mood indicator. You know, it lets you know that they want to jig fast or slow, or if they want a dead stick, you know, you see all that, and you can make them adjustments. But I think another big thing it did is, you know, we used to go out and sit there and wait for the sun to go down in the evening and say they'll start biting. You know, after we started using the Vexilar, we discovered, well, they aren't here. They show up at, you know, as the sun starts going down, the fish start moving, so then we can sit. But during the daytime hours, you got to move because the fish are just sitting somewhere.
Yep, you got to go find them. You know, we'd go out in those lakes in our boats, and we wouldn't sit on one spot all day waiting for a bite, but we would drill a couple holes sometimes ice fishing or put a big shack out there that we couldn't move and do just that, where with the portable shelters, it just changed everything. And we went out and just we attacked the lakes like we would in a boat.
Yes, and you know, I think another thing we learned back in them days is that them small lakes that are back in the woods that you kind of dream about, you have to go fish them early in the season. If you wait till January, the water gets too cold, the oxygen levels start dropping a little bit, and they don't bite.
No,
but
I think
we caught lots of fish going out there early.
Oh, we did. We had many, many. It was typically the weekend after Thanksgiving, and I can't even remember what year we started doing that. After a while, we started calling it the Minnesota Masters of Ice Fishing, and then along came the ice team. But the times and the memories we created and what we've seen develop in the ice fishing industry, my friend, there was no ice fishing industry when we started, and now it is an industry, and it's just fantastic. But, you know, the concepts that you helped pioneer, and I was so honored to be right alongside you guys, the portable shelters, the electronics have really caught on, and they've gotten better, and we can talk about how all those things have improved. But along with that, a lot of the other gear improved too, didn't it, Dave?
Well, yeah, clothing. You know, there's no such thing as cold anymore. It's just inadequate clothing. You know, we have the clothing to keep you warm. You know, I'm out ice fishing today, and, you know, I haven't even thought about, you know, fishing on my house. I'm sitting on my snowmobile, and, you know, there's a little breeze, but, heck, I'm totally comfortable.
Oh, you're absolutely right. And I think one of the first clothing lines to come along were the blue suits that became the identity of ice fishing back in the 90s. I remember when I got my first one and just revolutionized your ability to stay warm, and it's gotten so good. You know, another aspect of ice fishing, Dave, that I know is something that you talk about quite a bit, and the ice fishing rods. When I was younger, you really didn't even have a lot of rods to choose from. We'd take our old busted up rods from the open water season, and we'd cut them down and glue handles on them and make our own ice fishing rods. But as the new techniques took off, those rods really changed, and there became a plethora of options available for ice fishermen. And along with that, there became some very expensive pieces of equipment. And I think you feel that maybe that it's a little overkill sometimes, that there's a lot of great equipment, but at reasonable prices.
Yes, technology has caught up to the ice fishing world and in rods, where the less expensive, the mid-range rods right now are every bit as good as the more expensive ones. And you know, they got good feel, they got the right guides on them, they got a nice handle on them. You know, I have a little short handle, the Scepter rod that I'm using this year from Clam. I mean, I got my finger right on the blank when I'm fishing. I can pistol grip it real easy. You know, they're just, and it's a $40 rod instead of a $100+ rod.
Yeah, I know, one of the things I've always preached is you can get into ice fishing very inexpensively. You can almost use your summer gear. It's not very effective, but you could. You can find an open hole if you walk around the lakes around here. But if you're going to do it right, eventually you're going to want a shelter and some electronics. But you don't have to spend thousands of dollars on fishing gear other than that. Some two or three good rods and a handful of the right jigs and a few other lures, and you really can go out and do some damage and have some fun. What are a couple of the keys you look for in an ice fishing rod?
I didn't catch the question. I'm sorry.
I said, what are some of the real keys you look for in an ice fishing rod?
In an ice fishing rod is the flexibility of it, but stiffness equals sensitivity, where if the lure you're using bends the end of the rod, you lose feel. Now, I know we have spring bobbers and we have the light action tips, but then you're watching for the bite. If you have a good rod that's stiff but not rigid, then you can feel the bite and fight the fish. And you know, I've landed huge fish on, two or three, 4 pound test. You know, it's not the rod. It's the, it's not the fish. It's the rod that makes that happen. It's the right rod for the reel, right rod and reel for the line you're using.
No, I think you're absolutely right. The rod has to protect the line. And I'm kind of in the same school with you, and that's probably because we did so much time on the water together. But, you know, I'll put a spring bobber or a light tip rod on a static rod if I'm fishing two rods sometimes. But if I'm working a presentation, I want a rod that I can almost feel the thump when that jig gets to the end of the line. I don't want it to just bob at the end, and where I can feel the slightest difference in weight. But along, you and I both know that requires good line that has to be straight, but it also requires the right presentation. And I know you're a fan of tungsten jigs, aren't you?
Yes, this tungsten era that's come about now it's made people better fishermen because the jigs are a little heavier and it took the kinks out of the line, and now they. So every movement you make with your rod tip, you want your lure to be doing that same movement. And if you have coils in your line, that doesn't happen. You're jiggling your rod tip, but the lure is sitting stationary down there.
Well, I know you also like the speed you can get up and down when fish are a little deeper, too.
Yes. I was, fed fishing this morning, and, we're in, 29 feet of water, and you got a number 10 hook on it. It's nice that the tungsten has enough weight to get down there quickly. So when there's you got a fish that, today they're like 4 or 5 feet off the bottom, and you got one down there, you catch one, you want to get back down there as soon as you can. And tungsten has really helped that. And that clam, when the first tungsten came from Europe, that's where it was developed, the hooks were all too small. And the first thing we did at Clam Pro Tackle is we increase the hook size, and it's helped the fishermen, and it certainly has helped sales.
No, I have a bunch of those clam tungsten jigs too, and I fish with them almost exclusively. Now there are times I'll go to a lead jig. I still have boxes of the old ones, the Fat Boy, and all those we used to have. And there's sometimes where I want that maybe a little bit slower drop. But you still need jigs that show up well on your electronics.
That's very true. That's why I developed a jig called the Drop Kick, and it's flat on the top, and it shows up really well on your sonar. And another thing that ice fishermen should do is slide the knot that you got tied to your jig towards the point of the hook, and that'll make it hang more horizontal. And especially when you're using a drop kick, it makes it kick. It's not just wailing around down there. It's making little short kicks. And, that's it's actually a thing the zooplankton do to stay in one place. They have to, they sink if they don't wiggle. So these things are moving to stay in one place. And, we're just imitating that with a drop kick.
We've learned so many of these presentation techniques and the way fish react to them, not only from things like the Vexlars and the electronics, but when we started using cameras. Now, I don't use a camera every time I fish, but, boy, what a learning tool that was.
Yeah, certainly. I know, we started the Trap Attack ice fishing tournaments, and we went down to Lake Okoboji down in Iowa, and you could be looking in the water down there, and it's 15 feet deep, but you don't have any idea. It looks like it's right under the ice. It's so clear, and then that sight fishing, same as using a camera, but you can, you're just looking down, and, we all learned a lot there that what it took to get them fish to bite.
Yep. And just the viewing, the last thing I want to talk about, well, we got a couple minutes left, and something that I've really grabbed onto, something that I use a lot. And, I can't remember ever going, through the 90s, I don't know if I ever went out on the ice without some maggots, some wax worms, or some minnows, something. I had live bait with me, and of course we used a lot of maggots and spikes back then, and I still do. There's still times when live bait is by far the best presentation, but more and more I find myself willing to venture out on the ice with just some artificials. There are so many good artificials out there now, and if you're going to give it a little action anyway, and present it, a lot of times you don't even need live bait anymore. Is that what you're finding?
You're right. Plastics is becoming a, you know, a big part of ice fishing now. And something I learned, I was actually doing a television show with a guy out of Wisconsin. It was in the summertime. And, you know, I was using red-tailed chubs, and his daughter was, and he was using plastic. And he caught more fish on plastic than most people do in my boat. And I noted that at the end of the day, there was 15 pieces of plastic laying on the floor that looked perfectly good. But when you looked at them closer, they had a tear in them. You know, instead of putting that old piece of plastic on, he put a new piece on. And I said to myself, you know, I didn't fish with dead minnows neither.
Yeah, that's a great, great point, Dave. Dave, any last, we've got a minute left, so any last tips you want to give the modern-day ice fishermen that maybe they're missing out on?
Well, you know, I wouldn't go out there unless I have sonars. I mean, you just need that. You know, and to have a few rods rigged up instead of one, a lot of times the school of fish comes through, especially during the daytime, and you get this fish on. Well, by the time you get that fish off and get your line back down, the school has passed by. I've got another rod ready. So I just drop that on the rod when that fish gets on the ice and grab the other rod and put it down the hole. And then a lot of times you'll catch two out of that school instead of one.
That's a great, great tip. Mr. Gents, it's been way too long since you and I have been on the water together. We have to find a way to cure that very soon.
Well, maybe I'll have to get to Colorado again and get up and catch some of them fish that are out there.
Well, get you on some rainbows or some big lake trout. I'd love to. We'll get you up there. Love to do it. Dave, you've been a great friend for a long time, and it's always a pleasure to have you on the show. Thanks for joining us today.
Yeah, you too, Terry. Hope we get together soon.
Yeah, me too. Thanks. That's Dave Gents, truly a pioneer of modern-day ice fishing. Truly, truly one of the gentlemen in the outdoors. And I could say more about Dave while he was on, but I don't want to embarrass him. But he's truly a legend and a pioneer, and I was so privileged to be able to be around people like that as this industry was growing. And it's just he made a huge impact on my life, and he's just a great guy and a tremendous, tremendous ice fisherman. We'll take a time out. When we come back, we'll change up and take you up in the mountains to one of the lakes right here in Colorado on Terry Wickstrom Outdoors on 104.3 The Fan.
You work hard for your business. So should we. That's why First Bank offers commercial real estate loans, business lines of credit, and online cash management solutions. With tools and services designed to make your business run easier, your day could have less this and more this. Visit eFirstBank.com/business to learn more. First Bank, business banking for good. Member FDIC.
First Bank. Banking for good.